This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 14th of August, 1962. The title of this lecture is World Clearing Program. This tape is 68 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Thank you. Lecture 2, St. Hill Special Briefing Course, 14 August. AD 12, World Clearing Program. This is the first lecture or announcement or bulletin or anything else on the forwarding of Scientology on a very worldwide clearing basis. Now, the point involved here is that we have a world clearing activity sort of understood. It's sort of understood that we're going to clear a lot of people. Right? But let me tell you that simply incorporating a foundation and putting it into your own home with no administrative lines of any character, it's not the way to go about world clearing. Place begins to look like a bargain basement very rapidly. Of course, these snide references are to 42 Aberdeen Road, Elizabeth, New Jersey. I don't hardly think even the foundations of the house were left when we find But such things require a plan. And agreed upon, and more importantly, highly workable plan that will deliver the goods. Now, let me tell you about this plan in not the plan itself, but let's tell you how a central organization could go about clearing. I'll show you then how the plan can develop out of these mechanisms. We have HPA, HCA, some slight degree of neglected sphere now. Terribly necessary, but nevertheless a neglected sphere. Prep checking is not really an adequate skill to turn people totally loose with. There is another form of auditing which has just marched into view, which has terrific therapeutic value. It's goals listing. Not finding goals, but goals listing. And whatever else happens with trick ways of finding goals and that sort of thing, you've still got goals listing. The funny part of it is somebody is spinning in Keokuk and they write you a frantic letter saying, what can they do? Well, it's dangerous to ask them for their withholds because they sure will neglect to put one or two on and just wind up mad in hell at you. But you can ask them for their goals. You can tell them to write a goals list, state some astronomic figure, and tell them to write you some goals. And sends you the list. You can carefully preserve it or see that it gets turned over to an auditor or something of that sort. God's sakes, don't handle one of those lists badly. All right. There is this action. And very shortly, clearing assistance will definitely be part of HCA-HPA training. Definitely. How would he go about this? Trained HPA would know how to prep check, particularly if given a more reliable, if more expensive meter, with a red light or something like that, or a big oscilloscope or something of that sort. You've got a prep check action this person has to take. Now, that's very time devouring. person isn't going to stay in session at all with a flock of overts. We're right here in PT. They won't talk to the auditor. You can't get them to ask questions. You'll never be able to get the rudiments in to find a goal, don't you see? So that's a necessary action. Your goals listing, or any trick goals listing that you care to make sure is done, could be taught at that level. See, we've taken an awful lot off of an auditor now. You just look at your check sheets. Your check sheets are thin compared to what they were. And your next action would be listing a goal. See, we've just skipped finding a goal there, just omitted that. So an HCA, HPA who could list goals, prep check somebody into position for a goal, smooth case out, get the overts off and that sort of thing, and then could list all the items for a goal, would be a very valuable character to have around, wouldn't he? And gradually, as he went along, for sure he'd learn how to find goals if he'd gone that far. See that? So if you included listing of goals and listing of items for goals as part of HCA, HPA training, you've pushed clearing a long way ahead. Because why? Because a handful of St. Hill grads in an organization could find all the goals necessary to be found in that organization. There's where the skill and accuracy must exist. You got to really be sharp. Now that's very much to the point, because if you were to list the goals for the PC, or drive the PC on into the listing of goals in sessions, and as a St. Hill graduate, and prep check the PC, and set the PC up in all directions to find a goal, and then go ahead and know by the midroots the list and find the goal, and then sit down and do all the listing necessary to clear that up. Man, you're looking at hours. Now, these hours are being pushed out into a rather fabulous thing. Yes, you're listing goals here after you found one. When I call something to your attention, that once you get slippery on finding a goal, and you get used to the tiger drills and that sort of thing, this is less time-consuming, particularly as I'm cutting down and shortcutting how that operation is done. But notice that there are no shortcuts being done, aside from the tip that you'd better clean up the goal and lines at the beginning of every session, in listing a goal out. And you realize that a goal listing action runs as many as 2,500 items per list, and there are four lists. That's 10,000 items. Man, that's a lot of hours of auditing. So if we took a St. Hill graduate and moved it down to the point where he did supervision on the goals list and supervision on the listing of items, made sure this was going along all right. He makes sure of this, by the way, that at item 200 or 300 on each list, that the pain is in the right place and it's, you know, all firing off properly. He gives the goal another instructor's check, so forth, make sure it's firing. As long as he was satisfied the case was set up to have his goal found before he found the goal, and as long as he was satisfied that the listing would continue to free needle, if he had some people around who could list goals, do the prep checking, and do the actual listing of the goals, we've really smoothed this out, haven't we? All right, so in a central organization, a policy letter has just gone out that forbids a St. Hill graduate from doing anything in that central organization but find goals. And staff training has all of a sudden been given the push on the tricks of, they've all got a lot of prep checking and so forth under their belts now. Now just listing of goals and listing of items, don't you see? This is part of the training program. So very soon, somebody will be able to walk into a central organization, get prepared, get his prep checking, get the listing and so forth, and find himself for greater or lesser part of his, you see, it isn't that the St. Hill graduate would have him for one intensive or one and one half in, or two intensives or something. It isn't divided up that way. You don't do that way. He audits him as long as is necessary to find the goal. You got the idea? He picks him up at the moment he's ready to pick him up, as dependent on whether the PC is ready and has been carried on, and then carries him just as long as is necessary to actually find and prove out that goal, and then drops him like a hot potato and picks up the next PC. You got the idea? You see, he might be able, lucky enough, to find the goal in 4 or 5 days, or he might find the goal in 1 1/2 intensives, or 2 1/2 intensives, or something like this, you see. At that moment, why, you'd have to have a fluidity of schedule that the PC would be reverted to a staff auditor who was not a St. Hill graduate. That way, you've got central organizations doing clearing. As long as St. Hill graduates aren't put around in a dress section or something, you see. Now, that's a central organization program. Any St. Hill graduates there's had enough meter and enough this and enough that and needs pushing around and so forth. That's what they ought to be doing. Yes, well, if you're rich, you can have a St. Hill graduate as D.F.P. and one as D.F.T., you see. That's getting wealthy. That's getting real wealthy. Now we'll go into staff clearing in just a moment. But let's take a look now at that as an activity. You see that would be then a workable activity. And you'd start turning out clears. And you wouldn't be wasting your skill. This is a way to do this. Now you're going to see some section of this program as the wheels turn here. And although it is very hard on somebody in the middle of listing to suddenly lose his auditor and have another auditor shoved on, you're going to see that gradually taking place here, that the advanced 3GA auditor is finding goals and the new person just moved into 3GA is doing nothing but list. Got the idea? Now, where you have a group which is a co-audit, you realize that if inexactly and if rather rough to supervise, still approximates the same type of activity. Roughly. And now let me say a word about staff clearing as a special activity. Your staff could co-audit on getting the goals listed and could co-audit on the listing of items and thus form an auditing activity with the St. Hill graduate staff auditor, which is what they're called, picking them out just as fast as they were ready, or as he had time, and whipping down the list and finding their goal and shoving them back into the group. You see? You'd still have clearing going forward on a staff training program. See how you could do that. All right, now let's take another look over here at we're not speaking world clearing yet. We're speaking of central organizations. They will do an awful lot of it. But let's look at a wider program here. Let's look at world clearing exclamation point. We get 50 people. And I don't care what financial arrangements are made with these 50 people. Central organization might do something like this sometime or another in PE and so on, but possibly doubtful. If you got 50 people, and perhaps those people are contributing so much per week as a group, as a co-audit. You talk to these people, you talk to them straight from the shoulder. You say, here's what we're going to do with you people. You all want to be clear. Fine. That's all understood. There's no Going to be no arguments with that. All right, we've got that taped. You may not even know what it is, but you want to be it. That's fine. You're tired of being in the muck and going through the endless cycle of it all and going deeper. All right, we can lift you out of that. Fine. That's established and understood. But how are we going to accomplish this? Well, the way we're going to accomplish this is we're going to form a co-audit. And you're going to be in here 3 nights a week, or whatever arrangements are made in time. And you're going to have your PC, and you're going to be somebody's PC. And you're going to undertake the necessary actions to get goals listed, and then afterwards to get the items listed. And as soon as you're ready, or if several are ready at one time, you are going to draw lots with short straws. And the St. Hill graduates running this particular unit, probably two of them, will get that person by the nape of the neck when that person's ready, and just on a daytime auditing schedule, auditing certainly no more than 5 hours in the day, find that person's goal and shove them back into the co-audit. And pick up the next one, find that person's goal, and shove them back into the co-audit. Pick up that next one, find that person's goal, and shove them back into the co-audit. You see this? And we say, well, that's what you folks is going to do. And that means that within the year, you're all going to be clear. Within the year. Now, as far as second goals are concerned, we'll go as far on that as we can after all the first goals are found. We will keep this cycle going. But your main action at first is to learn something about the tools of your trade and read a few of these bulletins and try to make sense out of them. And you're not expected to study the theory of what's going on. You're not expected to do this, but you're actually expected to sit there and look like an auditor, as people in co-audit very often do quite well. And there's somebody supervising that co-audit, and the co-audit is pretty muzzled. It usually runs off rather smoothly. Well, a financing situation of this particular character, of course, is self-explanatory. I don't know whether you charge them so much to find their goal or something of the sort, or if they would carry it all ahead just on their weekly contribution, or what you would do about this. That's up to the persons running the co-audit. I myself would rather favor a fairly liberal weekly contribution, not a small one, and base it on the numbers I had that would make a perfectly adequate income running through the place, even a princely income running through the place, so nobody is having to dive sideways and audit some psycho from North Manitoba just because the center needs some money. You know, this is the wildest, most uneconomical thing to do. And yes, centers and field audits are always doing this. You know? They all of a sudden audit for free, audit for free, audit for nothing. The light bill keeps going up, you know, and the rent goes unpaid. And all of a sudden they have to go on some wild wing-ding of accepting PCs that they never would have dreamed of just because they were too bashful to ask for a certain constant contribution from people who were around that center. You got the idea. All right. Now, we take this as an action. What damage would it do? Interesting question to ask, since naturally you're going to have some interesting blow-ups in a co-audit. But if you have these people, if they got any withholds or looking blowy or something like that, you, sir, make sure that they tell you about them, whether they tell their auditor about them or not. You can probably keep this thing cooled off, don't you see? And you make some screaming set of penalties for anybody's PC blowing. They just don't let them have PCs that blow. In other words, make them take some responsibility for this fact, you know. Take the other mechanisms which come into account, or whatever other mechanisms necessary to keep the group together and keep it going, you see. Now, that group is going to be very hopeful. You're going to have to do a certain amount of training. If you don't do a certain amount of training, Why, you, of course, will find yourself around the bend with this activity. So the thing to do is to do the training at first, but get some goals listed so your program isn't stopped waiting for goals lists or something. And you take the person that is the best trained, that looks the best, or take that the few that are, you know, pretty good, and get the goals list in a hurry and get this program of finding the goal on your weekly auditing schedule, you see, just pocket-a-pocket-a-pocket-a, and then fit the rest of it in and put it together while you've got that part of it running. And these guys are going to go frantic. The people who aren't up to it are going to go frantic. Because something is actually happening, and if you haven't got to stand up in front of them all the time and fill them full of hope and courage and all that sort of thing, because they see it happening in their midst. There's Joe. They found his goal last week. See, he's going clear. He's being listed right now by Betsy Ann. Lucky stiff. See, something is happening. Well, you've got quite a boom to lower there. If somebody starts slogging it and doing nothing and muck it up, see? Now, you could even improve this just a little bit by making the person's auditing skill a certain number of points against their getting their goal found. In other words, you balance this off. Not only is their needle straight and their list complete, but their auditing points must be adequate to that. Some type of police action so that they deliver a proper session or have a wish to could count against their number on the list to have their goal found, don't you think? When it comes to select the next. Now, I wouldn't select them all at first. See, I'd grab them in handfuls of 3, 4, 5 at a time. I'd never get it plotted ahead more than about 6 weeks. See, on the people who have not had their goals found, I would never get it plotted ahead more than a few weeks. You see why? As this one bird says, he's got to wait for 8 months until his goal is found, you see, just arbitrarily. Well, he's going to ride. He's not going to try to jockey himself up into a more favorable position by making a better show out of it. You get the idea? Some type of mechanism of this character would be highly desirable. Now, you might think that this would cut people off from going and getting trained. No, no, far from it. Far from it. There's somebody he's looking pretty bad. And he's had his test, he's had his taste of auditing. He's had this and he's had that. All of a sudden he'll propose to you the novel idea that he could be of more help to you if he went down to the central organization and took a course and came back, because he isn't about to have his goal found in the next 3 months anyway. And why would he go and take a course and come back in the meantime and be straightened out by that time and so forth? You'll find out this kind of randomity occurring, and far from discouraging it, you should encourage it. You wind up with more help, don't you see? All right, you continue on along this particular line. And you will wind up at the end of a year, if two auditors had 50 people, you would wind up at the end of the year with a high probability of having gotten the lot. You would have released into the community 50 first goal players. Thud. That would do things, man. Now, you shouldn't multiply the number of franchise holders or co-audit type groups doing this by the number of years and arrive with the figure of how many people will be cleared in 10 years. This is not the way that would go at all. It would go by arithmetical progression. This stuff would start taking off on a high climb, you see. About the only thing that limits it is how many people could be put through St. Hill. That's a limiting factor. And this course is, you know, rough, and at no time will I ever downgrade an auditor's skill, just let him go home because his wife is dead of starvation or something. These are minor affairs. Are you a good auditor? That's what counts. You see. Because actually, you lose the whole game, see? I let an auditor go out of here that can't audit, can't handle cases, and that sort of thing. The whole game is lost. Any time he's been here is actually lost. Now, that number actually could be stepped up without reducing quality too fantastically by various refinements and so forth. But there are an awful lot of old-time Scientologists around. Lots of them around the world. You'd be amazed. So I've instituted a new program of putting them in touch with franchise auditors. And I'm now in the process of getting all the names and addresses of everybody who ever thought he wanted to be trained and sending them to the nearest franchise holder, wherever they are in the world. So that in his own town, why, somebody may have quite a few HPAs, HCAs, that sort of thing that he hardly knows of, or that have, and then I'll write these people and tell them to contact the center, and the center can talk to that person and get that person in and cooperating in some way or another, you see. And we'll use our backlog. We'll use our carefully built up backlog. And that backlog, I, of course, have been carefully building up over a long period of time. And it's rather sizable. It'd surprise you. Now, that gives you some semi-trained assistance right at the start for administrative action, or it gives you people who would simply come into the group for this particular purpose, or various other uses, don't you think? Well, this is a jump-off. Now, that's not a very startling arrangement, is it? That doesn't stun you. But it's a terribly simple arrangement. And if you think that in a single year there's a possibility of releasing 25 clears into this community and 50 into that one and 35 into another city, and it'll start to look interesting. I think it'll look far more interesting than you realize at first glance. So this is a sort of a kickoff. Well, now I've been waiting until we had a proven-up procedure that was going along and it was doing all right. And, of course, I'm working on refining the speed with which goals can be found, which is the single pin that would extend this program out too much. And we've got something in the run. And that is kind of the way I figured it out. I've talked to a couple of people who know on this, and they seem to think this is a very feasible program. It's essentially very simple. But don't get so crazy as to believe that you can audit 25 hours a day and carry forward the program. It must be a finite auditing period. And I certainly would never audit more than about 5 hours in a day. I just wouldn't. Five and a half hours. That's about what a staff auditor does. And if I myself were working in a center, I think I would probably work about, I'd maybe do 4 or 5 hours of audit in a day, and I'd spend some time in the evening on training and making sure the co-audit was running all right. And I'd have some reception assistants, somebody to answer the phone and carry the money to the bank, and it's nice to have such people around. I've almost found them quite useful. Now, as we expand this, that is a basic world-clearing activity. Now, of course, the workhorse of Scientology is a central organization and always has been. It brings in new people quite consistently. It's PEs, it does various things. Years ago, central organizations only existed as information centers, and after that just as means of, training. They've always existed for training. But as far as PCs are concerned, means of demonstrating results and keeping up the level of results and that sort of thing. Now, we started out on a program, which was not necessarily premature, but I just got the word around, that we had a certain number of people we're going to clear out in the field, former HCC PCs and that sort of thing. And a central organization ought to start getting those lined up using this other program of clearing. It isn't a question of if they're going to come in, because most of these PCs come in central organizations rather scattered. around there in the oddball places of the world and so forth. And they come in, we're going to run them through this same type of program I just described to you. See? But in central organizations, they start getting these people lined up. Not a question of if they are going to come in. It's a question of they were on this list of people to be cleared. When are they coming in to get their preparatory actions? And everything I've been doing is trying to improve quality of auditing up to a point where it could be tremendously trusted. Well, you're going to have trouble with that in any organization. You're going to have trouble with that on any co-audit. Is to keep up the auditing quality and not let it be slipshod and not let it skid. It's always a fight. It's always a fight. Because a bunch of green auditors can think up. You think you can think up. Gave you a lecture an hour ago about dynamic assessment. And there's going to be some of you asking the instructors, what do I do now? I have two dynamics rock slamming equally. Now, what do we do from that point, you see? There's going to be a problem there, that's for sure. But you think you can think up problems. Well, most of your problems make sense. Man, you get a co-audit going. You get a co-audit going, the problems you get make no sense at all. You can't figure out how the devil this ever came about. It should happen to you, you know? It's pretty weird. This guy's been mooning around and worrying and worrying and worrying, and you've never quite been able to figure out what he was worrying about, and finally one day he levels with you and so forth. He can't figure out whether this is theosophy as it ought to be practiced. And you say, huh? He's been there for 6 months, but he thought he was in a philosophy group of some kind. You'd be amazed. Some of the wild things. And of course you have less control over people and they get themselves fouled up. You know, you can foul up PCs and students pretty badly on the second dynamic, other regulations when they're missing. Well, things can get awful kind of gruesome around in a unit, but how about one over which you have no control? Of any kind, you see, where the people are in their workaday life. You also have the problem if they try to adjust it with you when they can get off. And so forth. And I just never would Q&A with that at all. I don't care when you can get off. I can only tell you what week you must take off because you've got to be here. And the fellow says, yes, but if, and so forth. And I'd be sure and be fired if I took that particular week. Oh, well, get another job. Don't worry me with that part. You're supposed to be here. You can get that straightened out pretty well. They have a tendency to muck up your time. You can watch a central organization. You know exactly what point the public is impinging against. Because it'll be that point that is the most scrambled and mucked up. It's the most offline. And man, it's really offline. It'll be something in wherever it directly contacts the public. That hatch you got to put back on about every 3 months. Because it'll go sailing off and reception is now expected to empty the wastebaskets. Lord knows what's happening. But this has gone out, you see. Rooting of bodies. Body rooting lines, that sort of thing. Well, that can happen in a central organization. It sure can happen like mad on scheduling and so forth on co-audits. Your main danger there is not maintain. It maybe it doesn't make any sense to you, but let me tell you very severely that the main danger is with your limited staff and the small number with which you are operating that the public shoves your time scheduling madly out. And you just got to be meaner than a gut-shot bear. They're going to tell you they're going to wander in there at 8 o'clock when they should have been there at 7:30 and that sort of thing. Well, you just got to learn to lower the boom. Because the point they'll most mess up is time. Time is the single source of human aberration in actual fact. There'd be no aberration if it weren't for time. The Dianetic axiom. And that is the point where the craziest ones will louse you up the most. So it's the craziest ones, of course, that you want to keep in line hardest. So if you want to keep the timeline most severely walked, you will also be imposing a tremendous amount of good control on those that are the worst in the group. And that's an excellent control factor. So if you control time, if you control the group's time, you'll find out there's less interpolation and aberration visible in the group. And they will want you to audit them after the co-audit at night for 2 hours, you see, or in the afternoon from 1:37, you see, to 3:18, you see, because they have to pick their mother up at school. And if you let them move around your time factor, you've let them control you in their sessions. That's just something that you should use. Because the first thing they try to do, it'll be the hardest front for you to hold, but once you're holding that front, you'll find out that you'll win in many other zones and areas that you never dreamed of winning in. Just hold that time. Guy is there at 7:31. He is supposed to be there at 7:30. You've already started to tell them what they were going to do this evening and how they're pairing off. You're reading their schedule or their roll call, and somebody walks in. For heaven's sakes, greet them effusively. Don't let them ever sneak in. Greet them effusively. Just stop the whole operation. Be happy they were glad to come tonight. They'll be there at 7:30. And make sure that they know that you think the scheduling is important. And as soon as they find out that you think scheduling of what you're doing with them is important, a lot of other marbles will start concatenating with other marbles, and the next thing you know, they won't have lost their marbles so inaccessibly. They'll start to reassemble. And they'll say, well, this outfit means business because everything fires off on time. It's a method of controlling people who are otherwise quite unruly. Now, that's the basic action of control, but you've got to keep a certain amount of administration running. And if you have just a couple of auditors and nobody doing any administration at all, you all of a sudden are going to waste an awful lot of auditing time. Awful lot of auditing time gets lost in answering the mail and filing the letters, you know, and answering the telephone and so forth, and answering foolish questions. And you've got to save a certain amount of time in order to get broad clearing effective. Now, I'm speaking about time merely because it's a primary control point, because it's a primary aberration point. These people, given any 50 people, will rather string out to the degree of preparation if you have a single thing they have to pass. They will actually sort of sort themselves into the leading order of hens on the length of time they will pass this certain thing. It doesn't much matter what it is. Because of this, the longer they take to do anything, why, the more reactive bank is in their road. In other words, the more reactive bank is in their road, the less understanding per unit of time. The reactive bank actually is composed of no time at all. And they get up into a total timelessness, so they never have any time to do anything. So this has various ramifications, but it plots out just this way. Time is a single source of aberration. And such a person requires, people have different periods of time to register the same recognition. See, we hang a sign on the wall and it says Boojum. And if you actually add a reaction meters wired up to every person in the room that could plot it on a drum of some kind, it would fire off, you would find out that everybody in the room would have taken a different period of time to have recognized what the word was and what was hanging on the wall. And it would get on down from anything from a hundredth of a second down to 10 minutes. And that is a direct index of how much bank is in the fellow's road on study. You understand? Some students require longer than others to absorb the same data. Now, if it were just a pan-determined factor, that is to say, if it were just a factor which nothing existed the same on all subjects, this would be very easy to plot. We'd say this person is a 10-second character. In other words, it took this person 10 seconds to really register and soak in any one item a person was looking at. Unfortunately, this isn't true. Human beings vary from subject to subject, dynamic to dynamic, because their goals are sorted on a different dynamics, and they're stupider on one thing than they are on another, so it takes them longer to absorb one thing than it does another. So you get a certain unevenness running through all this because of the variability. There actually isn't a real general constant. You take some girl and you show her a slide rule. And she looks at this thing and she looks at it, she looks at it, she looks at it, and looks at it. All she's supposed to find on this thing is it's got numbers on it, see? And she looks at it, she looks at it, she looks at it, she turns it over and she looks at it, and you're waiting for this girl to recognize that there are numbers on the slide rule. And she just looks at it and looks at it and looks at it. An hour later, she's still looking at it. And there's only one thing you have asked her to recognize, is that it has numbers on it. She just won't do it. You show her a cake recipe that's full of numbers. She goes, bzz, bang, practically knock up the cake together and throw it in the oven before you can spit. Get the idea? It's just where her goal sits. Here was numbers in one form and numbers in another form. And in one form, she just knows she must not ever understand this. Well, of course, that's practically an infinite time non-understand. That gets in the road of your meter reading. A person's ability to read a meter is dependent upon the amount of aberration they have about meters. In actual fact, in 10 minutes, person B was very aberrated on the subject, has less time spent in recognition. You follow this? See, out of 10 minutes, there is less of that 10 minutes used in actual recognition than person A, who is not quite so aberrated on that subject, who only observes it for a tenth of a second. There is more recognition for person A in a tenth of a second than there is for person B in 10 minutes. Do you see? That's why you hand the meter to one person, and they have a hell of a time seeing the needle. They stare at it and stare at it and stare at it, you know. Well, hell, it read seconds ago. And they're still looking. And another person, the thing gives the barest tick. And the person's right there, Johnny, on the spot. He's recognized that, digested it, and put it out. It's on the subject of a meter. Conversely, we might take this same person, give them a very complicated bulletin. This isn't necessarily true. There is some coordination between these two points. But not necessarily. We give them this bulletin, and they fire off on the bulletin, brrr, and they go in and they pass it, brrr. They understand all of it, everything is all fine, and so forth. And they get to take the meter in their hand. When did it read? Well, they'll stare at it as long as they haven't got time in which to recognize it. A very sane person has fantastic quantities of time. I almost made somebody faint one time by telling them the local program for this planet. That is this quarter of the universe program for this planet. This person has gone. You can see the exhaustion coming off of this person. Oh my God. That just embracing a plan that had that much time mixed up in it. Real time mixed up in it. Just wore them out. I was tossing off things, well, in 5,000 years, this is what's supposed to happen, you see. And then this is... Actually, we're in a dead period right now, which is absolutely true. There isn't anything much going to happen here for about 5,000 years, so there's little time to stretch. But after that, why, there's several programs firing off and so forth. And the actual allowed time for this particular planet was 15,000 years, you see. And plot this, plot that, and so on. And that's a fairly rapid program. That's fairly rapid, you know, speedy program. It's a sort of a rush program. This person was dying at the idea, you know, planning something out for 5,000 years. Well, hell, I've seen a billion years planned out on a track. Down to its smallest detail. It gets to be fantastic, you know. I mean, how much time is time? And it has a great deal to do with the amount of recognition a person can experience per unit of time. So anyway, here's your source of aberration. Your basic source of aberration is time. If you didn't have any time, you wouldn't have any motion, don't you see? You'd have no havingness either. Unit velocity of vibration. So the possibility of having any matter would be quite slight. All these various other things all add up. And the more bank a person's got, the less time he has during the longer period. Do you follow that? A rock can sit there without any recognition at all for a few trillennia. You see? Speed of recognition depends on how much time a person actually has. Present time for some people is 1/1000th of a second. And for some people, as much as a second or two. And you can expand that out to about 10 minutes. And then it becomes frightening. If your present time was to be expanded in this split second, here, I mean, just the snap of my fingers, your present time was expanded to 10 minutes. So that you knew everything that was going to happen in 10 minutes. You realize you would be able to see the consequences of everything that was going to happen and correct it before it occurred. You certainly would make no mistakes, would you? So the number of mistakes a person makes is actually proportional to the amount of present time they have. Present time is a band. Present time is not an instantaneous instant. And the saner a person is, and the better they are, and the freer they are, let me put it that way, let's forget this saner, but the freer they are, the more present time they've got. It gets pretty wild. Somebody with 10 minutes of present time, you see, he can unturn all the corners he shouldn't have turned before he turns them. But this guy who has got 1/1000th of a second as his present time never foresees the difficulty of doing anything. He never foresees it. He does the most impulsive and stupid things you ever heard of. You find him always driving up the side roads and backing out of those to get back onto the main highway to drive along. Always. He's just in a total confusion all the time, all the time, all the time. He never can foresee anything. There isn't any time to foresee anything. Foresight is not really brightness, but PT. There's nothing beats looking. You can be pretty smart and think your way out of things, but nothing beats looking your way out of things. Of course, if you were able to foretell the future for 1,000 years with complete accuracy, your first thought is that you would be bored stiff. Well, I don't know. How'd you have to have excitement that way? Whereby you have excitement only because you're stupid. That's quite interesting, isn't it? Anyway, this basically gives you a very fast index on PCs. I didn't mean to talk about it so long. But it gives you a very fast index on PCs. Co-audit members and so forth. It gives you very, very easily assembled groups and so forth. Not necessarily dependent upon APAs and OCAs and that sort of thing. You see, not necessarily dependent upon their intelligence, that sort of thing. But the amount of time it takes them to recognize something. And you could almost break down your group in advance in the when they would get their goal found. You see how you could do this? It's by measuring how much time is required to find out something is there. And this is useful in numerous ways. It's meter useful. Put something in front of somebody and wait for a ping on the meter. Yeah, that's the most direct index I know of. You put a little red light or a statue of a snake or something like that on the desk in front of them, put it down with a thud, and look at your meter. They'll finally register. But on some people, when you put it down, they registered instantly. You don't even have time to look back to your e-meter, and the thing has been recognized. You got the idea? Well, a length of time it takes them to absorb auditing information would be the length of time it would take them to be reliable. There is some coordination between these two points. You shouldn't be don't yourself be stupid in classifying these people or in pairing them up. And you should pair up comparable recognition periods, if you want to call it that, rather than comparable social interests or comparable ages or something like that. It has nothing to do with it. It's comparable recognition period. And these two people in a co-audit will be fairly satisfied with each other. It will seem reasonable to both of them. And if you've got somebody who's got a 10-minute recognition period or something like that, and you put them with somebody with a 10-minute recognition period, the other person will sit there quite happily. He knows how long it takes to understand. But you mix up a tenth of a second recognition period with a 10-minute recognition period, and they both drive each other batty. Now, methods, I haven't even explored, actually, many methods of determining actually what the recognition period is or anything like that. But such methods could easily be developed and easily be used for dividing up and separating and putting together co-audits that would be highly successful, because your co-audit will break down on the basis that some member thinks the other members are stupid. And if you keep them segregated at comparable levels of recognition, they're not going to get this. Now, all of that is in technical lines. But how much should you teach these people in a co-audit? Well, I just irrationally demand perfection out of them. I wouldn't cut back my science. Never make a practice of tolerating bad auditing. I don't care who's doing it. And you demand this out of them, you'd be amazed how closely they will approach it. Of course, they'd probably be utterly hopeless when you were 10 feet away at first, and then they'll let you be 50 feet away. They're okay as long as you're there. And then because you're running the group, they will be all right. I wouldn't count on them ever taking any vast responsibility for cases individually, don't you see? Because they work all right as long as somebody will take some of the responsibility for it. You find out they work fine that way. You'll find out in any co-audit, the amount of gain in the co-audit is to some degree proportional to the amount of responsibility which the instructor of that co-audit is taking for those people. And if he's taking very little responsibility, you have very little gain. Regardless of what process they're running, people are always coming around asking me for a process. Well, there's thousands of processes. You, an old Scientologist, could sit there and dream up auditing processes day and night. They'd all have some workability. But you haven't got to waste any time on this co-audit by dreaming up processes of this and that. You have a present-time problem process which is independent of OW and responsibility. You have problem of comparable magnitude going back even further, so you don't have to get too much into OW and exchanging these terrible confidences that they don't want to. You can dodge these things to a very marked degree. You can set this thing up to run quite successfully. But your best bet is to just put them right on the project they're supposed to be on. They're there to list goals and list items. Well, God help them. They better be studying or listing goals, doing something, or prep-checking goals lists, or doing something analogous to a goals list right up to the time when they get their goal found, you see, until a person's goal is found. In other words, put them on quite real actions. Start them out on a prep check. You always got two or three in a group you've had something to do with, and you've cleaned them up to a large extent yourself. Start in with them and get them with a goals list so their goals list is prepared. Start the others in with a prep check type of action. That'd be enough for staggering. Then really keep them quite germane to getting the goals list all straightened up and squared away. You know. Spend lots of co-audit time on the actual fact, and don't try to dream up side panels just to keep them busy. Because if you've got to keep them busy, you can always give them something to study that would advance their skill. And if you're up against keeping people busy, aside from swamping up their present time problem, and they've got everything else done and they're just on wait, make them study. You see? Make them study listing. They'd study that with considerable enthusiasm. You get what I mean? Mm-hmm. Try not to occupy people's time because people have to be kept busy, but try to utilize the time available to you in that co-audit. Try to utilize that time in the most productive possible way that's contributive to the situation. Now, I don't know how many co-audit people could be handled by one auditor. I think one auditor handling it would get fairly lonesome. I'd hate to be in that position because I've been in it for years. It's not a very tenable position. You got no datum of comparable magnitude. You're always on parade, you see. You never take your boots off in the barracks, you know. It's harder on you than you would think, and many field auditors just practically go out through the bottom just because they're all by themselves. They get lonesome. I got nobody to talk to about this. They're always explaining, always teaching, you know, and there'll be something missing in their vicinity. Now, as you see, a co-audit in a central organization could be organized also along these lines. There's no reason why a central organization shouldn't run such a group of its own in its immediate vicinity. But its group certainly would have nothing to do with whether or not such a co-audit group was running elsewhere. Now we speak of whether or not a group so running should be a franchise holder, a city office, or something of this sort. For a long time, I've been trying to decide this myself. In actual fact, we're moving up toward a better proposition as a city office. A franchise holder doesn't feel like he belongs as much as he should. There are many things that are a little bit haywire with this. And actually, these characters are holding an outpost, don't you see, of some kind or another. They're holding the exact point of reference. And if that point of reference isn't firmly on the map, they to that degree are being scanted. Because they move around and fold up and pass on and that sort of thing, it has sometimes been difficult to maintain a center of control. I mean, not control of the point, but the point's control of the environment. the operation ebbs and flows to too great an extent. But I expect a greater stability will occur in the future, and I expect to see franchises more or less turning into city offices. Have very little to do with income. It has a tremendous amount to do with the influence in the area and the erection and maintenance of a worldwide communication channel. You find out that your communication channel falls off to the degree that the person is outside the organization and comes up to the degree that the person feels he is inside the organization. You understand that's just feels. It's quite amazing the difference this makes. And what I'm looking forward to is that every such area held down, of course, is simply a city office. It's a perfectly official office. People walk in there, they don't, and it's in communication with everything else, and it gets itself in trouble, and it's got somebody to scream to, and then the persons there don't feel that this is an outsider, you see. They feel, well, that's one of the gang, we got to pitch in and help, don't you see? Any way we could promote this, I would be very happy to do so. But we're advancing now toward a necessity to make everything neat, as neat as possible, because it's going to blow up anyway. I'm a great believer in blowing up neatly, you see. For years now, in central organization design and communication line design, I've tried to make those lines expandable. And yet I find out any time a central organization doubles its business, its lines blow up. And what you really do is try to make the lines as expandable as you can and then be an expert in putting it back together again. You get the... And then you're smart. That's a very smart measure to take. Then you're not always dismayed because it somewhat fell apart. For instance, I know that in every central organization, the body line between the DFP and the registrar must be put in every 3 months. I'm an expert now in patching that line up. I'm willing to be reasonable and talk to them about it and give all kinds of unreasonable answers. You see, I work hard at this. All right, that line, because the public impinges against it totally, blows up every 3 months in every central organization in the world. All right, so it does. Well, I used to knock my brains out and be very unhappy about it all the time because it fell apart. And now I realize it's perfectly all right for it to fall apart because I'll always put it together again. Get the idea? Well, any time increased traffic hits a network of communication lines, you can expect the seams to open and the water to pour in here and there, no matter how carefully you planned it. And if you're so sold on perfection that you go out and commit suicide because your plan wasn't perfect every time, say, help me, you don't get much accomplished. You're just picking up new bodies all the time, you know? But the point I'm trying to make is you start throwing 60 clears, 50 clears, 30 clears into this community and that community inside of a year. Well, we haven't got enough telexes. We haven't got enough personnel. We haven't enough administration. We haven't enough file cabinets. We haven't enough printed books. You understand? Well, we're walking into this in that full realization. Just go ahead and realize it. And then realize that we can still put it back together again. You understand? And it'll look a lot better to you. Because the second you start putting this much traffic and this much strain on your own communication lines, remember, you're putting an equal amount of strain, which actually is multiplied for various reasons, on the public at large. And they're not organized at all. They go into a total confusion. They hit your lines. They blow up. And any patch you've put on blows off at that moment, you see. And it's pretty bad. You must be skilled in putting something together, not skilled in holding the same old line together. You see, your line's gone. Well, don't waste your time and energy and sweat in screaming and saying how terrible this is. Just be an expert in putting the line there again. You see, it's gone. Put it back. Don't scream at me and say, do you realize that for 4 months there has been no HCO secretary in Chicago? You know, like a what do you mean? Isn't it? Well, what's the matter with you? See? I mean, what are you doing that for? Why don't you send me a cable and say, just found there's no HCO secretary in Chicago, and Janet Woods would be fine for the post as she appointed. See, that's much more effective than all I have to do. I don't have to wade through the scream, you see. All I have to do is say, okay. And all of a sudden, you've got that area in order again, or it's being put in order. Get how this is? Well, you're not in a position of holding the world together. So you might as well get used to the idea of putting it together. So any co-auditor central organization entering in on a clearing program should design it so that it'll operate perfectly, without a single hitch. Please do. And get the exact people on post that should be on post. And get the exact files that should be there, exactly filed and in place. Just plan it down to a split hair. And then put it all back together again the second it blows up. Because you never do an expansion or a forward action of this character without coming apart at the seams. The public sees to that. Now, you hold the fort with time, with good regulations, with discipline, by not compromising, by not throwing everything out of line just because one person goes out of line. You hold it together, and you realize that world clearing is on a basis of you somehow make it. It isn't a planned juggernaut that rolls on smoothly down the highway. Look, there isn't even a road there. And until recently, hasn't even been a vehicle. So if you start bumping and so forth, look down, you find out you're going over tree trunks. Don't scream, just make a better road. You got it? No, it's something you do off the cuff. You follow policy as far as you can. You put it together the way it should be as best you can. And then you make it work. And if the thing goes all out of size and so forth, and you've got the city council also in the co-audit, suddenly. Don't blink longer than is necessary to hand them the enrollment cards. Go ahead and do whatever you can. But don't do this. Don't scamp technology. Don't fail to deliver the goods when you promise it. And don't fail to turn out clears. Those are the only mistakes you can't make. You can't make those mistakes. Then you can make any God's quantity of mistakes, and the world will forgive you. Okay? Well, I didn't mean to preachify at the end, but this is the first word I've given you on world clearing, and it's quite important in actual fact, and I think you particularly that are gathered here this evening will find it quite exciting. Thank you very much.